This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
As they ask for them.
Can you tell me, I mean, obviously there's a methodology and it's hard to just talk about, but can you tell me some things, like some examples of things that you're teaching teachers to do differently than they've traditionally done in the past?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that we really pride ourselves, and this is the basis of mastery learning, is in like standards-based grading, is that it's a shift from focusing on the task that's being completed or the time that's being spent in a seat or in a classroom or in a building to a focus on the actual understanding of the content that they need, the actual mastery of the content. So it's no longer, did Mitch do worksheet 2.2? It's, have we assessed him and did he take away what he was supposed to from 2.2? And I don't care whether that took you one time or 16 times. And I don't care if you did the worksheet or if you just looked at it and did something else that brought it to you. I don't care if that took a conversation between us, a video, or your peer talking to you. What I'm trying to do is get you to there. Because what so often happens is you sit in a classroom, you know, and I'm going to make it like a really simplified version, is like, I say, what's 2 plus 2? And you say 6. And I say, well, we've been here for 2 days, so we're all moving on. You're coming with us, whether you know it or not. You're done for. You're not going to get 2 minus 2 now.
Well, that's always the problem, right?
And that's what happens. And so what happens is you get a gap that gets created in first grade, second grade, third grade, and never gets closed. By the time the kid gets to seventh or eighth grade and starts figuring out the world a little bit, like some of like how to work things.
Right.
They've already convinced themselves that they're dumb when they're not. Right. They just have a gap that needs filled.
Yeah, that's why they had an IEP.
Yeah, and they figured out. And one thing they figured out is like, oh, if I try really hard, I get an F. If I don't try at all, I get an F. So that's a lot easier. And that's why you get this kid who gets deemed as unreachable, unteachable, bad, because it is like, I'm not doing that. Like, forget you teach, because I've tried for the last 5 years of my life, and I've been told I'm dumb.
Yeah, frustrated. If you give up.
Yeah, we had a great example of that. We have a teacher in the Philippines actually that runs it. She teaches three different like groups of her students, how they're sort of categorized in her math, middle school math. She has her general population of students. She has her gifted students, and then she has her a booster class, which is the kids that are deemed challenging or struggle, right, that need a little extra help. When she originally heard about the GRID method, in the fall semester, she ran the GRID method with her booster kids and saw immediate growth from them, more than she'd ever had, because she was filling that gap. So in the spring, she ran it with all three sections. She ran the exact same GRID. They all got the exact same everything. And more than 50% of her booster kids outperformed her gifted students.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jeff Gargas. I am the COO and one of the co-founders of the Teach Better team. We work with educators and school districts all around the world, helping them to reach more students and increase engagement and teach better.
All right, Jeff. So thanks for coming on the podcast. I know it took us a little while to hook up and we had some scheduling issues, both of us. You know, it's like we're all stuck home, but we got more scheduling issues than we did when we were out, because something always comes up, you know?
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, we can't go anywhere, but it seems like we're always somewhere else. I don't know. It's interesting.
Right. Now, and we connected through, was it podcast guests or was it through us?
Yeah, podcast. It was the podcast guests and then LinkedIn. And then,
yeah. Okay. All right. Good. Well, I'm excited to hear and have the listeners hear about your company and what you do for education, because, you know, I'm always a big advocate of, I think that we don't, people are going to kill me for this, that I don't think we teach our children right in terms of the world in which we live in now, which is a lot about what you guys are doing, versus like 45 years ago. Like, you know, I don't think, with the exception of like the implementation of technology and stuff, I don't think if you and I went back to school, it would look that different than it did when we were in school. I mean, it's changed a little bit, but, you know, maybe they're using some technology, but I'm saying I don't see it. Maybe it's just I'm missing this, but why don't we go back? Tell me about your background, where you grew up, because I think it's interesting, your educational path. And then we could talk about how you got involved in Teach Better and started the company, all the types of stuff, because we talked off mic, but I want to get it on mic. So,
sure. So it's kind of a wild and crazy story, and I don't do short well, so I'll apologize now.
Don't do short. We got plenty of time.
Good, because I got lots of time. So I mean, I grew up in Northeast Ohio, still live in Northeast Ohio, about an hour away from where I grew up. I did well in school. I was an AB student. As I've gotten more into education now, I realized that a lot of that had to do with my, you know, I had a very stable home environment. I had very supportive and active and engaged parents.
Right.
I was active in things at school. I was in a safe area. I didn't have any baggage. I had a lot of privilege. Yeah. So that put me in a great position to do what I call, you know, what we call playing the game of school. I knew how to get by. I knew how to get my A's and B's. I knew how to get there.
Right.
I mean, I'm somewhat intelligent enough to get that level, but where I was, who I was, who my family was and everything, and where we were, like, for me to get an A or B on a
like
test,
sheltered, just like, right? Yeah.
Makes sense. Makes sense for me.
That's a lot of the problems that's going on now, right? Because people that are in, less, more underprivileged areas, less privileged areas, their school is like the place they go for stability. And now they're stuck home.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest struggles now, is that, like, you know, you have students who don't have that stability at home. They have a rough environment at home.
Yeah.
When we have them in schools, we have the ability to give them that environment for those hours of the day.
Right.
Where that's where a lot of teachers are struggling with right now. Is
they,
like,
probably don't have their own office remotely, they can go into in a quiet room, and there's noise all over the place. Yeah, exactly. It's hard to learn.
You don't know whether they have Wi-Fi access, whether they have a device that does it, whether they're going to get the freedom to get on that device and use it, whether they have pen and paper if they need to write, or glue to do something. Like, it's
right,
so
things
crazy
that we take for granted growing up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I had all that growing up. So I did well in school, and then I went off, and I oddly enough, I actually, when I originally enrolled in college, was to be a teacher. I quickly changed that because I got accepted into the Dana School of Music in Youngstown State University for guitar. And I was in a band at the time, and that was what I wanted to do. I wanted
to
be a rock star.
Right. Yeah.
And start a record label. And I ended up leaving the school of music because I shouldn't have been in college in the first place. I wasn't mature enough. I had different aspirations that I was trying to do. I wasn't trying to do the 9-to-5 thing. I wanted to create things. I wanted to build things. At that time, my life was to build a band, and then from there, build a record label. That's what I wanted to do. So
yeah, there's a music, there's a business side of music. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did end up doing that. The band played for a little while. And out of that, I created an independent record label, and I ran that for about 7 years. And oddly enough, also in there, that's actually where and how I met my co-founder of the Teach Better team, is Chad Ostrowski. He was actually a drummer in a band that I managed.
That's funny.
That's how we initially
connected.
You hear
a lot of those stories from people I interview. It's
a crazy small world type of thing. Yeah. And then they, you know, that went down. I was coaching high school soccer years after that. And Chad was actually a college goalie, very, very talented. And I had him helping with my goalies, and we became friends past label time, whatever. During that time, we became friends. He went back to school. He was actually originally a scientist. He went back to school to get his master's in education, became a teacher. I went and actually started an online marketing firm, working with businesses.
So this was after the record label.
After record label had went down, a few other bouncing around doing random things. And the mix there, I was coaching soccer on the side while I actually started coaching while I was running the label, but then it kind of, you know, shifted. The label ended up going down with the label. We had the label, and we also had a management, when we had a a division that did.
Yeah, concerts. You're looking for like young talent, up and coming, right? Who maybe don't get the attention of the bigger labels to maybe hit a home run at some point, right?
Yeah, my goal was really to be, I wanted to be the guy at the local scene that could help you get to that next level scene, not necessarily the majors, but to like the mid level to then get, you know, go on there. But that, you know, it was a rough time in the industry and a lot of reasons why the label didn't work out. So then, you know, like I said, Chad was become a teacher. I started an online marketing firm working with, you know, building websites, doing SEO, doing content marketing, email marketing, social media, because I had to do all that for my label because we didn't have any money.
Right.
So I was self-taught on all that. Yeah. And so I started building that while Chad went off, became a teacher. And then in the mix of his years of, you know, first 3 or 4 or 5 years of teaching, he struggled. He was in a district that had those kids you're talking about that, you know, it was 100% free and reduced lunch, which means all the kids are in a socioeconomic situation where they get free lunch and very difficult situations at home, a lot of transiency, and just tough kids. And Chad did well with it, but eventually had what he would call the worst year of his life, decided he needed to make some changes, look to research. I credit his science, like his scientific mind, for breaking down the issues he was having, finding the research that support the what could be a solution. And what he discovered was that mastery-based learning was the answer to a lot of it, but there was no real way to get to do that. You know, mastery-based learning, you're talking about every student moving at their own pace.
Right.
Which means you
everybody has their own IEP, right?
It's essentially, right? So you could essentially have 30 students doing 30 different things on any given day, which is like literally what nightmares are made of, I think,
right,
in a classroom, right? So he had to find a way.
Especially if you said he was like in an inner city where he's working. Yeah. So I had a friend who was a teacher in Westfield, and you know, Westfield's also like where you grew up, and he got a new job paying more money in like Newark in an inner city near us. Mm-hmm. Right. So I would catch up with him, like, how's it going? What's going on? And it was like testing time, one of those big standardized tests. So I said to him, like, how's it going? You know, how do you guys do with the tests in the inner city? He goes, tests? Are you kidding me? It's like survival every day. Like, we can't even teach these kids. We're worried about a friend coming in, punching him in the face. Or somebody's got a gun, a knife. I mean, it's craziness. So I can imagine what he was going through, you know?
Yeah. So
looking for a better way to do it.
So he ended up putting together what we now call the grid method, which is kind of like our bread and butter. I refer to it as like our Big Mac. It's what most people know us for. It's where everything started was. We do a lot more now, but and he started seeing positive shifts. These students that in every other class were failing and acting up, throwing punches, throwing chairs, all these different things, were paying attention to his class. They were not only did his classroom like management issues go to almost zero, but these kids were actually succeeding. They were thriving. And he felt like he was giving them a higher rigor content. And so more teachers started taking notice. Obviously his administrators started taking notice. He started getting stopped in the hallways, asked a lot of questions. And he thought, maybe if I throw this thing up on like an ebook or something, like just my ideas and how I do this in my room, then I wouldn't have to answer as many questions. I could just like answer follow-up questions. So he called me and he said, hey, I got this new way of teaching. I want to do an ebook. I know you do that now. Like, can we talk?
And, got it. I see. So that's where the synergy came from.
That's kind of where it connected. And so then we started talking.
So he wasn't like going around the curriculum. He was following the curriculum, but it was the method and the way he was teaching.
So the grid method, it's a framework. It works with any, it's not a curriculum. It's a framework. So it's not a tech tool. It's not a curriculum. It's a framework for an adjustment of how you structure your actual instruction and the way your room operates. And so it can work with any curriculum, any textbook, anything that you want to put together. We have teachers that utilize it K-12 and in the collegiate world across every single content area. So there is no restriction on that. And so he came to me about doing an ebook and, you know, I drove around for I don't know, probably an hour.
What was
and
his
half.
Idea? He was a teacher, so he had a teaching job. So what was he going to do with the Z-book?
It was his idea was purely based on people were stopping at him in the hall. And he wanted to share it with them, but he didn't have time to like break it all down because it's kind of heavy, right?
So it really wasn't a business idea yet. No. It was like, hey, I got this concept, I want to share it with the world and help other people. Okay.
Yeah. That's and where good so ideas then,
come from.
And so my famous kind of words to him amongst the team that we joke about is I said, dude, we're not just doing an ebook. You know, after hearing not only what it did for his students, but also what it was doing for him as a teacher and as a husband and as a father, his life was better because of it. Because of the just
he was stressed,
more fulfilled, less stress, everything. Right. We didn't take things home with him like he used to. And so we sat down, we started talking about when I said, you know, we have to share this. If other teachers in your district have tried it and it's working again and again, like I think you got something. I think
yeah, right. If it's repeatable,
Exactly. And so we started working on that. So we started working, you know, creating content. We created an online course. We started trying to get Chad, you know, out to as many conferences, sharing, getting into places, doing whatever we can.
Now, this was when?
About 6 years ago now.
Okay. So 2014 roughly?
Yeah, 2014, end of 2014, going to 2015. Yeah. Okay. So, we spent about the first, you know, year and a half, 2 years was just us working that, you know, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. It was a true side hustle. He was still teaching. I was still trying to build my business at the time, right? Yeah, we were servicing. We both had families, so we both, you know, had to work after the kids went to bed and our wives, you know, went to bed for the night. And then that was when we'd go to work creating content, building things. And then that's sort of how we got to there. And then eventually we had, you know, the first district came around that said, hey, we really like this. Like, I think we, like, our entire district needs to do this. We need to change the way all of our teachers teach.
And that where was this district?
Down in Dayton, Ohio. So
it was in the area. It was like, so how did they hear about what you're doing?
It's about 3.5. We actually, so oddly enough, it's kind of a funny story. When we figured out how that happened was that there was a conference in Columbus, Ohio. It's about 2 hours south of where we're at.
I lived in Columbus for 2 years.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm up just a little bit south of Cleveland.
Okay.
So Chad messaged me, it was in February of 2016. And he says, okay, hey, is it all right if I spend the last $350 in the bank account on this conference? Because I have to pay in order to go present because I pay for a ticket.
Like, that was it. You were down to $350.
Yeah. And it wasn't company money. It was.
Right. And you really didn't have a business yet, right? You didn't have customers.
Yeah. At that point, we had had a couple like little things. Like, we did like a very like small workshop. Like, it was really like a test workshop. And right. Actually, oddly enough, we had an insurance agency who we trained some of their trainers to track their independent insurance agents with it, which is weird because there was a little moment in time where we thought that's where we were going to go.
Right, like a business end.
Yeah, but so then, you know, I said, if you think the right people are going to be there, let's do this. So we paid it. Crazy thing was the conference wasn't until June. So it was, you know, 4 months later, we go down to Columbus. Chad presents in a room to about 20, 25 educators there. And one of them there is a curriculum director for a district in Dayton. And she comes up and says, I need you to come share this with my entire district. I think we need to do this. And so we went down to the end. It actually is the end of the July that we went down, presented, and the goal was to get buy-in to see if teachers were interested in doing this. And if they weren't, and enough were, we would move forward. Crazy thing was we were 11 days away from when Chad had to report back to his classroom for the next year. And we had an overwhelming response. Like, you know,
it was like the end of August, right? What did you guys start, like, after Labor Day?
It was end of July. And so he would have had a report. It was like August.
Oh, right. Before the seat comes back, before the kids come back.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So they end up saying, yeah, let's go for it. And Chad, you know, was able, you know, worked with this district. They were awesome. They said, you know, good luck to you, you know, best of luck. He found them a replacement teacher really quick and stuff. And
so he basically quit his job right there.
Yeah, like, we had to because the way we roll things out, we're in the school districts.
So it's like you're working there now, really.
So that's that service, right? Yes, yeah. Exactly. So he had to be free to do it. And I was, so I stayed, I continued to work. So I still kept running my business, but then he went full time. And it's one of my favorite stories because I told him, I'm like, we did that. He's like, all right, I'm all set. District was awesome. My boss, you know, great there. Got him a replacement. Like, we're all set, man. Like, what do we do now?
Right now, what do we do?
And then I said, all right, dude. I said, you got 6 months. So we got 6 months until we run out of cash.
Yeah.
And he's like, 6 months? I said, yeah, 4 months, buddy. He goes, well, wait a minute. You said 6 months. I said, I know, 3 months. And then we're out of cash. And so, and it was just sort of this, we've joked that, like, ever since then, we're like, oh, we're always at 4 months, right?
Right, you had your first customer. You already had your methodology and your ebook and your materials. You had already tested it with people.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like you were just like diving into the lake and being like, I hope there's no rocks in the bottom. I mean, you had
no. Yeah. I always joke, and it's funny, we wrote a book last year that we put out last fall, and like, we joke about in it that, like, the story, when I tell that story, like, if I'm out, you know, mingling, I tell that story, it's a lot more fun when Chad and I are like, well, what do we do next? Like,
right.
Because it's more like, oh, let's just wing it. But a lot of people get confused. Like, when you're an entrepreneur, when you're in business, like, you hear about risk taking. Yes, you're taking risk, but you're taking calculated risk, right?
Yeah, well, I'm sure at that point there was a lot to wing, but still.
Yeah, we had never done it, but we had done research. We had looked at best practice.
And it wasn't like he'd been teaching this and you're like, oh, shit, we got to put this into writing now. Like, you'd already done that.
Yeah, we had worked through a lot of those scenarios and what if stuff, but we hadn't done it before. And we're like, yeah, well, I hope it works. Client, right? So, and it did. We're actually still working with them. We're going into year 5 or whatever it is now with them. and training on more than the grid method at this point. And then, you know, just kind of went from there. So it continued to be a grind. And then, you know, we caught another one here, another one there, and away we went. And so it's been an incredible journey. It's crazy for me because I'm actually a 3-time college dropout. I do not have a college degree, but I spend my days helping teachers educate people. I actually, in the mix of all that craziness, when I was with the label, I actually taught as an adjunct professor at Kent State University for 2 years college degree, which was a lot of fun as well. Right. That's one of my favorite stories, but it's an interesting mix. Chad and I really, really work well together because of the balance of early on, he leaned 100% on me for business and marketing and sales and everything we need to do. And I had to lean 100% on him to learn like what the heck was it teaching, right? Like what are all these words? And then, you know, since then we've built our team to fill in all those gaps and supplement those. And that's led to us.
But you're more the business guy.
Yeah.
So I'm running.
That's not to say, I mean, Chad's a great business mind.
No, you guys overlap, I'm sure.
Yeah. So Chad, you know, Chad, focus. Yeah, but Chad leads, you know, like really leads the development of our training and leads as the lead trainer. And he's out there in the field. He's, you know, on a, you know, pre-COVID and when we're not in the middle of pandemic, he's on the road 4 or 5, sometimes 6 days a week. I'm the operation. So I'm making sure that we're staying legal, that we're getting the money we're supposed to get, that things are put together, that things are being delivered the way they are, and that our team's operating and with the market and stuff. So it's a good mix. And we have Ray Hewer is our third owner at this point. She came in a few years later and she, you know, she's a big operation piece of the marketing side of things and the brand and how we communicate and speak with our community and stuff. And we've built a nice little family now. So.
Got it. All right. So this is an entrepreneur's podcast. So I want to do two things. One is maybe understand a little bit about what the Teach Better method is, what the business is doing for education, and then also the business side of it. You know, how do you grow the business? How do you find new clients? What have been your challenges? I mean, that's why you approached me, because I'm an entrepreneur's podcast. I also noticed over your shoulder, there's a quote there from the Go Giver.
Yeah.
Did you see the Go Giver Influencer that just came out? There's a fourth book.
I did. Yeah. I haven't got it yet, but I did see it.
I just downloaded it. I got to listen to it. Those are great series of books.
I actually have 9 of those throughout my house.
Different quotes. Posters?
Yeah, I got another one over
different
here.
Different quotes?
Yeah, all different quotes for the book. It's my favorite book.
People listening, since it's not video, it says your true worth is determined by how much more you give than you take in payment. Because I always tell people, you want to be on the long end of the giving stick always, because you always get more extra back that way.
In this one over here says the greatest gift you have to offer is yourself. I had a mentor great, when I was younger. When I was younger, I did insurance sales. So life insurance, health insurance.
Right. That's a great sales business to learn sales, because it's really hard to sell. Nobody wants it.
It really is.
Even the people that want it can't get it because they're
sick. Especially as a 20-year-old. It's really tough.
Yeah, because nobody you know needs it. They don't have families. They don't have like things that they need to protect.
I remember I vividly remember a time walking. I was training one of our new employees, and I remember walking in. I'm 21 at this point. I walk into a house, like big, gorgeous house, more than I could ever afford, right? And this guy, he's like, you know, mid-40s or so at the time. He's got kids that are older than me. And I'm walking in, and we're going to talk about his finances and stuff like that. And he walks in, he gets there about 10 minutes late, like, because it was a power play. Right. And he literally walks in and goes, is this the guy? Because he knew the person I was training. It was a training appointment. And I'm like, yeah, I'm Jeff. He's like, you got 10 minutes. Let's go.
Yeah.
Talk to him for an hour and a half. So, okay, you know, but it it really helped me to work under pressure, learn, but I had to really dive into what I was doing. But
yeah,
I had a mentor during that time that at the time I didn't realize what he was doing, but as I've gotten older, I really dug into what he said to us. He used to tell us all the time, if you focus all of your energy on helping other people, one day you'll turn around and be a massive pile of cash behind you.
Of course.
And at the time, like, he was talking cash, right? Because we wanted cash. I was a 20-year-old. I wanted cash. Sure. But as I got to know him more and got older, I realized that the cash he was talking about wasn't necessarily cash. It was success. It was happiness. Right. It was purpose, right? And so that's how we've built everything that we do with Teach Better Team. That's what we focus on, is this. We are 1,000% helping over selling every day and everything we do. What we do is...
Yeah, let's talk about that.
So as the Teach Better Team, what we do is we provide training, professional development for educators.
And by the way, it's teachbetter.com, right? Is the website. We'll put it in the show notes, but just so we can say it. Okay.
Yeah. So we do, you know, we that can look a few different ways. We do that both online at teachbetteracademy.com, which has a bunch of free courses and paid courses. And there's a membership that you can get everything and stuff. And then also, and obviously right now we're doing a lot of webinars, a lot of virtual training.
Of course.
And we also do a lot of live in-person training. And those can all look, the live webinars and or the live in-person can look to be like, you know, a 60 to 90 minute session that's just introducing staff to a new concept, a new idea. It can be a 1 day or 2 day workshop. We're looking at like 6 to 12 hours of in-depth training. Or it can be what we really love doing is partnering with a school over a 3 to 5 year period and working with them to actually roll out and implement a whole new initiative, whether that be building wide or maybe it's grade level wide or content wide or district wide. And so we work with them. And one of the things that I think separates us and that's been really great for success is that it's not, we really don't like being one and done. It happens from time to time, but we don't like to just do a workshop and that's it. That's what happens with a lot of professional development. You get great training. You might be psyched up, ready to go back to your classroom, implement it. Then you go back to your classroom and you turn around because you run into 5,000 issues every day and you turn around and all you got is a 1-800 number for some receptionist.
Right.
We're very big on, and you can ask all of our wives and significant others that we're very big on. They get our own cell phones. They get our own emails. They get personal. We are ridiculously passionate about making sure that we are always available, but we also, our plans include, and we really push for the follow-up. We're getting in that we go into the classrooms, not with a check, you know, a clipboard checklist, and a checklist to observe them, just to have conversations with them. We're going in there saying, all right, now I see what you're working with. Now I feel what you're working with. I hear what you're working with. Tell me where you're struggling. How can we do it? I don't even care if it has anything to do with what we trained on.
Right.
Where are you at? What can we do? And then we work with those teachers and then also with the admins to help them better understand the teachers, to understand where they're going. And we build that, you know, and create that. What has typically happened for us is that once we start working with a district, when they want something else, they come back to us, even if it's something that we don't actually, like we hadn't done before.
Right.
And so the way we've built all that and the way we get sort of kind of the second half of your question is how we've done all that is content. We create a ton of content and we make ourselves ridiculously available and helpful all the time. And we did that for a long time. When Chad and I sat, we actually sat at a Buffalo Wild Wings having wings when we kind of started laying things out. And he's like, well, so how are we going to do this? I'm like, oh, we're going to be able to build this big thing. We'll change the world. We're going to make money. It's going to be great. He's like, well, how are we going to do this? I'm like, we're going to give it all away for free. And he's like, wait a minute, what do you mean? You said we're going to make money. I said, yeah, we're going to make money later. Like at that time, I'm like, I was literally thinking, like, oh, I'll keep building my business. This thing will grow like 10 years from now.
Yeah.
But I'm like, no, we're going to give it all away for free. And he's like, well, but then, and then we'll get them. I said, no, I'm like, I want someone to be able to come to our site, take the free online course, read the blogs, chat with us, and be able to effectively run the grid method in his or her classroom without us.
Right.
And of course, Chad was like, you know, that's stupid. You saw a lot of business owners, and they're like, well, wait a minute, unless they're already into the content marketing world. And I said, if you do that right, they'll want to work with us.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier call when they say, hey, can I pay you for this? Versus, hey, will you give me money? And that's what we've done. And that's why, you know, that first district is actually a great story. That was the first time it really happened. We had a lot of other clients going on time, but we were 2 years into that first client. And they were looking to train some of their students or some of their teachers in like another thing where they found a struggle, which was this assessment literacy. So really making sure that the assessments they were providing for their students were really assessing the right things.
Right.
And they wanted that training. And their local, in Ohio, it's called an ESC, an Educational Service Center. It's like a county level support team. Mm-hmm. They were offering assessment literacy training. And the curriculum director called us. She goes, yeah, so the ESC could do this. But when I was talking to the principals, they said, well, won't Chad and Jeff come do it? And she's like, I told them that you guys don't do this. And I'm like, what'd they say? They're like, I bet they would. And right. So we created a train and we've done that. And that's sort of how we've created everything is we listen to our audience and our clients and we create things as they need it. You know, now we train on, you know, we have like 100 and some different offerings that we do.
Right.
But we've listened to our audience and just created things as they ask for them.
So can you tell me, I mean, obviously there's a methodology and it's hard to just talk about, but can you tell me some things, like some examples of things that you're teaching teachers to do differently than they've traditionally done in the past?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that we really pride ourselves, and this is the basis of mastery learning is, and like standards-based grading, is that it's a shift from focusing on the task that's being completed or the time that's being spent in a seat or in a classroom or in a building to a focus on the actual understanding of the content that they need, the actual mastery of the content. So it's no longer did Mitch do worksheet 2.2? It's, have we assessed him and did he take away what he was supposed to from 2.2? And I don't care whether that took you one time or 16 times. And I don't care if you did the worksheet or if you just looked at it and did something else that brought it to you. I don't care if that took a conversation between us, a video, or your peer talking to you. What I'm trying to do is get you to there. Because what so often happens is you sit in a classroom, you know, and I'm going to make it like a really simplified version, is like, I say, what's 2 plus 2? And you say 6. And I say, well, we've been here for 2 days, so we're all moving on. You're coming with us, whether you know it or not. You're done for. You're not going to get to -2 now.
Well, that's always the problem, right?
And that's what happens. And so what happens is you get a gap that gets created in first grade, second grade, third grade, and never gets closed. By the time the kid gets to seventh or eighth grade and starts figuring out the world a little bit, like some of like how to work things,
right?
They've already convinced themselves that they're dumb when they're not. Right. They just have a gap that needs filled.
Yeah, that's why they had an IEP.
Yeah, and they figured out. But they and one thing they figured out is like, oh, if I try really hard, I get an F.
Right.
If I don't try at all, I get an F. So that's a lot easier.
Try.
And that's why you get this kid who gets deemed as unreachable, unteachable, bad. Because it is like, I'm not doing that. Like, forget you teach. Because I've tried for the last 5 years of my life.
Right.
And I've been told I'm dumb.
Yeah, frustrated.
If you
give
just,
up.
Yeah, we had a great example of that. We have a teacher in the Philippines actually that runs it. She teaches three different like groups of her students, how they're sort of categorized in her math, middle school math. She has her general population of students. She has her gifted students. And then she has her a booster class, which is the kids that are deemed challenging or struggle, right? That need a little extra help. When she originally heard about the grid method in the fall semester, she ran the grid method with her booster kids and saw immediate growth from them.
Right.
More than she'd ever have because she was filling that gap. So in the spring, she ran it with all three sections. She ran the exact same grid. They all got the exact same everything. And more than 50% of her booster kids outperformed her gifted students. Because they were
using
there.
Your methodology
yes.
in the Philippines.
And it's not necessarily because of our methodology. It's because of the shift of focus on what she was focused on, which is the fact that those kids just needed a little extra time to meet their actual capabilities.
Right.
I mean, does that mean that's going to work for every kid? No, because, you know, it is what it is, but it might take someone longer. You know, you think about when we learn how to walk, we all learn at different time spaces and different ways. But when we get into school, we're like, you all have to do it this way, this time, and do it like this. It's just the simple shift from that, which is really tough. And then another big thing that we shift on is like the role of the teacher in the room. It is no longer to be the deliverer of content, right? Because if you think your role is to deliver content, you've been replaced by a phone. Because I can literally get anything, any content in the world. I can learn anything on my phone. Your job's now to facilitate my learning, to teach me how to find the right information, how to distinguish between good and bad, how to verify sources, how to take that and actually put it to use in the world. So it's those are sort of some of the big catalysts of where we're at is the shift from into mastery base and into focus on what do we actually learn and not how much time they spend in my seat. Not did I give them 25 extra points because they brought in a tissue box, right?
Yeah.
Like that has nothing to do with learning.
Right.
So it's a big shift. That's sort of the core. That's like sort of our specialty is the mastery learning stuff. So.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSight Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSight. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSight and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21,000. That's LAW to 21,000, or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot.
Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show. Yeah, law school is very similar to that because they use the Socratic method. So you're basically teaching yourself. You're exploring and answering questions and asking questions. And
your teacher or your professor at that point should be facilitating that exploration, right? That journey that you're taking, right? By helping, by not telling you what you need to learn, but how to learn what you need to learn, right? So that you can figure it out, because that's what we have to do in real life.
Right.
Right. If your car breaks down and your tire blows and you've never changed a tire, you got to figure out how to do that, right?
Right. Just because somebody told you about it doesn't mean you're gonna.
Yeah, but like, if my car breaks down, I'm not sure why. Well, I got to explore, and if I don't know anything about that engine, it's a lot harder for me to explore. But if I've learned a wide variety, or I've learned how to explore things and how to look things, now in today's world, if I've learned how to Google,
right,
I can probably fix my
car. Pretty much.
Not necessarily fix my car, but I can at least assess what happened, right, and figure out whether I can or not. But I can change a tire without having anyone ever shown me, right? So it's just this shift in mindset of what your role is as a teacher and how we should be guiding our
students. That probably eliminates issues of an imbalance in education and understanding of a topic. So you don't have the issues, maybe I'm wrong, I'm misunderstanding you, but you don't have the issues of one teacher understanding materials better than another. So if you eliminate those issues where you're just helping people learn the material, like in law school, you don't really have to know that much about what you're teaching if you're just asking people questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned this to you last time we spoke, but there was this time at Cornell when I was at there where the biology professor had an argument with one of the law professors. I told you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the law professor swore that, you know, it's we teach by the Socratic method. That's the way you do things. The kids learn, they teach themselves. And the biology professor just didn't believe him. He gives lectures and he writes down. People take notes. They learn. So they agreed to switch one day. The biology professor went to the law school, was totally lost, couldn't teach anything. And biology, grant, is probably a harder topic than certain legal topics, right? Because it's just in English. But the law professor came to the biology lab. It was like a 300-person lecture and just proceeded to ask questions, opened the book. Well, tell me what you guys are studying. He didn't even prepare. People were coming up to him after, that was the best lecture I've ever been to, and this and that, you know, all this stuff. He didn't know anything. So he proved his point, but he just opened the materials and started asking questions. So I think that if you have a methodology where it eliminates the human factor of, you know, some teachers are better at explaining things than others, mm-hmm. if I'm getting it from what you're saying, then you're going to help the kids more.
Yeah. The way I always say it is there's literally nothing you can teach me that I can't go Google. Literally, there's of nothing. I win that argument every time. I'll even Google that argument and win you win it with that. The catch is what I can't teach, what Google can't give me is you.
Right.
Whatever your personality is as a teacher, whether that's fun jumping on tables, telling stories, or that's just super compassionate with there, whether that's the way you can connect with me and make me want to go learn, Google can't necessarily give me that. Now there's people who can go out and get that, but that personal connection and to make sure that I'm learning the way I need to, I'm learning what I need to know. But allowing me to explore that way, like that's where you really, I argument with a music teacher who said, well, you can't learn how to play guitar. I'm like, yeah, you can. I'm like, you can't possibly teach me how to play guitar as well as Google, because I can do that all day, every day. I'm only with you a little bit of time. But what Google can't give me is your passion for music, right? Your love of whatever, you know, whoever your artist is and the way you
instill that. Right, assuming that the teacher has that, right?
So this was particular to a music teacher, right?
And they're not worth anything. Yeah.
Well, it does beg the question of if that's what you think your calling. Role is to be the expert, you're gone.
Right.
That isn't your role. And so if you don't love those students and if you aren't trying to instill that passion of being a lifelong learner and explorer like that, then you're outdated.
Yeah. You're waiting for them.
And I think you're seeing that, you know, some teachers leaving the profession because it isn't the right fit. There's a lot of other reasons too for, you know, pay and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
But you're seeing the teachers that really just want students to become like lovers of like learning, take over. One of the best quotes ever. So the team that published our book is Dave Burgess Consulting, and Dave Burgess is a phenomenal, highly sought after in the education world as far as speaking. And what Dave always says is he says, if students didn't have to be in your classroom, would you be teaching to an empty room?
in a lot of cases.
And right now, in the mix of COVID, where a lot of teachers are finding out that, yes, they would be.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of teachers who literally have every single kid checking in every day. And it's not just the teachers that are in the good areas. It's teachers all over, because those students truly love that teacher. They want to learn.
Right.
And they know that that's someone who wants to help them learn. So I think this, our current situation, is going to give us a lot more of that. And that's going to be one of the
Now, have you guys implemented different things now because of the pandemic crisis?
Yes.
You're teaching teachers how to do this remotely, right? Because it's frightening the hell out of a lot of them.
Yeah, it is. It is scary. It is tough. And as a business, we had to, we took a couple really hard punches to the gut right off the bat. We lost a big chunk of change right off the bat. All of our speaking engagements and revenue from there was gone almost instantly, because a lot of spring and summer conferences and stuff, and some schools that just got budget cuts, had to shift things to different things. So we had to shift all of our stuff to virtual, which was how we shifted. And then we also shifted everything. So when everything closed down, we put a pause. We said, we paused everything that had to do with sales or marketing, anything we did. And we've went 100%. How do we flip all of our content? How do we create more content right now? And how do we tailor it all to the current situation? So we started doing all those types of things. You know, we started doing daily drop-ins in our on live streams to check in. We started creating new courses and content all around virtual learning. So yeah, so we're doing a lot of training on how do I do these things you talk about in a virtual setting? How do I manage that? How do I, as simple as like, how do I organize things virtually versus my papers that I have, you know, when I'm in the classroom. And one of the big things that we're working on now is with district leaders and teachers alike is, okay, now that we're here, what does the fall look like and how do we prepare? Because we got to kind of prepare for all the different situations. Are we back physically, but with social distancing? Are we 100% virtual still? Are we some sort of a hybrid blend? Or are we where I think we're going to be more intermittent, where we might go back and then have to come back out or back and forth and stuff. So
shifts, right now it's like breaking up.
Exactly.
Things.
Yeah. There's so much that could go on. So we're really looking at what does that look like and how do we prepare ourselves, our the logistics and obviously that, but also how do we prepare our instruction that so that it'll work in any of those situations.
Right.
Which for us, we're like, hey, yeah, we got the answer. Like,
if you never thought you'd have to do this. This is ridiculous.
No, but if you focus on the mastery versus nothing else, like, or as the most important piece is that as far as the instruction is concerned, it doesn't matter whether you're virtual or in person or blended. You're still focused on a mastery because they don't have to be in the classroom to earn credit. They don't, you know what I mean? So
right. So, the problem is that some teachers are not comfortable in this environment.
Oh, yeah.
They're not even comfortable. Absolutely. Parent-teacher night. They don't like in front of teacher and parents.
Yeah,
so
which
funny.
Is, yeah, which you're seeing a lot of teachers that really, I think, are stepping up and finding out a lot about themselves. They can adapt, but it's definitely uncomfortable.
I'll probably get in trouble for this too. I've been disappointed with, compared to other towns and other districts around here, as to little, at least through my children, that I see the teachers doing in our system. Now, my kids aren't in elementary school anymore, but my little one is in eighth grade, and she's got some teachers that do some things online, but for the most part, they go, they record, they leave it, they give you the assignments, they check in with you, and you're on your own to kind of learn it. And, you know, during a time when these kids are looking for connection with the world, I would hope that the teachers would be more proactive than, you know, kind of like, yeah, well, I'm home. I mean, what do you want me to do? Type of a thing. And it's unfortunate. Yeah. We don't use your methodologies, obviously. So
yeah, but even if you take our methodologies, the most important thing right now is that connection piece. Hey, look, we're all going through an incredible, like, travesty, crazy, unforeseen, unprecedented time right now. Like, that's trauma. There's no other way to look at it. Like, it's trauma for everyone, adults, teachers, admins, students. So, you know, where teachers should be focusing now is, all right, are you okay? Are you there? Just so you know, like, I love you. I'm here for you. I care about you.
That's the thing. Like,
I'm supported. And also, here's some opportunities to keep learning. But like, first and foremost, are you okay? And what do you need?
This is going to be okay. We're going to get through this. Yes. I mean, look, your kids spend more time with your teachers than they do with their parents, because it's just the way it is, you know.
And that classroom full of kids, you know. And so, you know, a lot of, you know, a big encouragement is to get on video a lot. Yeah. Whether it's recorded or not, but get on video a lot. Have your kids on. I love them. So my kids are both in elementary school. And so when their teachers do the Google Hangouts or Zoom meetings where they have the whole class there, it's just like the way my kids' faces light up is just awesome.
They see everybody.
And there is some learning going on there. They're learning social skills and stuff like that there. Right. But like, more importantly, they're just getting to see the faces that they miss.
Right.
Because they're not good. You know, it's just, you know, one of those things. So
it's difficult.
It's tough, though. It's we're seeing it's such a variety all across the country of where people are or are not, the comfortability level, what their district is saying they can or cannot do.
Right.
And everything. So,
well, you know, in every industry, I talk to obviously a lot of business owners across a lot of industries. And if you tell them me, if you told me all the things they planned for, contingencies and what they'd have to deal with, none of them
would, was this.
We're going to be locked away for 90 days or 4 months. You better be ready. We're going to have all these contingency plans. I mean, unless you're a infectious disease specialist and you're
sure, yeah.
The government, they had plans in place. Of course, you know, Trump threw them out after Obama came in, but you know, all that kind of stuff. And Fauci, people in the infectious disease area knew that this was coming. It's a question of when and what. And none of us did, but you know, you'd think that at the, you know, I don't know. You'd think, I guess now all the schools, right, they're going to have contingency plans in place where we can flip to an at-home learning environment right away because it took them a while to figure it all out. And, you know, now there's going to be no more snow days because they can just do at-home learning for the day.
We've been pushing that. We actually know some schools that or some districts that have done away with them because they can continue to learn so they don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and so I hope that's one of the positives that, that we can pull away from this is that again, that's simply when you talk about no snow days, that's simply just changing the focus from it's not about time in the seats. It's about are they learning?
Right.
And we have a vision where there's no grade levels.
You do?
Yeah, there's just a whole bunch of grids in our opinion. So a mastery grid is sort of like a unit of study and like the learning path. But our thing is if you're in third grade and you can do 12th grade calculus, why shouldn't you? If we're not allowing them to get there because they didn't perform well on that one test that tells us that, but they've mastered all the other content, all the other content, right? Like, why shouldn't they? Like, we're preventing the kid that could cure cancer. Like, right? Or, and the same thing is if you are struggling with third grade math, you shouldn't go on to fourth grade math until you get
there
it.
There shouldn't be great.
Because you're
it's not
never
a system that works the kid. It's the kid that works the system.
Yeah.
Right?
And so, we have our grand vision is that there aren't, obviously there's a lot of logistical things there with ages and stuff like that, but it should be, and I should be in full control when I go in there as a kid. Now, obviously younger, there has to be a little more adult control, but should get to the point where I have the control of like, I'm working through today. I'm going to work on math. So I'm going to Mr. Smith's class because he's my math teacher for third grade math, which is where I'm at or whatever the third, whatever you call that. Right. And that they're in control and they're moving along their educational journey, getting what they need.
So you'd have, in theory, you'd have a teacher with kids from all different ages who are
potentially.
Yeah.
Potentially. Now, depending on, you may have to separate ages because obviously a room with
maturity of stuff,
maturity and stuff. Right. And in the,
but they could be close. I mean, they could be
exactly
fifth grade or third, fourth and fifth.
Exactly.
Altogether.
Right. Yeah. You know, but and that also eliminates the fact, like if I'm a third grader, I'm still working on it. Like, I'm not in a classroom. I'm not stuck all the time in a classroom of third grade because maybe I'm struggling with third grade math, but I kill in English.
Yeah, probably are.
But I'm stuck in third grade because I failed, because I failed math. Well, let me work on my math, but let me go, you know, be challenged at a fifth grade level, sixth grade level for reading and writing because I'm doing well there. And that helps close gaps. So it's a long ways out. That's part of our,
admirable goal though.
We have a vision of what that looks like. We have a vision of some of the logistics and the software that would need to be created in order to make that happen and stuff like that. But that's
right
now we're starting with, how do we change the way teachers look at that? How do we change the way districts in the state look at what should be our focus on education? And there is a big shift. We are not the only ones doing that. There's a lot of people that are starting to realize that, and it's really exciting. I think we're seeing more changes month to month, you know, quarter to quarter right now in education than you used to see in decades.
Oh, yeah. We're pushing technology. We're probably pushing 15 to 20 years education. Yeah. Hopefully we're pushing five or more, you know?
Yeah. It's getting there where it's starting to move a little bit quicker, which is exciting and promising.
So. Right. Plus you want other people out there doing things, even if they're not exactly what you're doing, because you can't do it alone. It's too big of a herd for you to be the only guy in the room saying, hey,
absolutely,
this is the right way to do it. And they all look at you like, why? Everyone else is still doing it this way. That's one of the problems why things don't change.
And one of our thing is like, we actually never say this is the right way to do it. We say this is a potentially a good way to do
this
it. One of our biggest thing is that it's teach better. It's not teach this way.
Right. I understand.
I'm just going off. I liked how you said it. Like, it's just, that's our thing is from the very beginning, Chad was very adamant. He goes, I never want to go into a teacher's classroom and say you're doing it wrong because like they're probably doing some really awesome things. I just want to go and say, hey, I figured out something that might be
make
useful.
It better.
Here you go.
Yeah.
And if they take it, great. If they don't, that's fine. if we can get them all to focus on mastery versus time and seats, that's fine. If they use a good method, great. If they don't, who cares? As long as they're checking those boxes and doing what's right for kids. So that's like our biggest thing is like, it doesn't have to be our way. It's exactly what you said. One that's too hard to do anyway, but also it doesn't have to be our way. We want to be one of the ones that you think of. And we want to be able to help you. But if you figured out some other way, like high five, help those kids, you know what I mean? So,
yeah. All right, so let's talk about the business side of the business. So, so in terms of, you know, how do you grow the business? How do you run the business? What kind of employees do you have? How do you find your business? New opportunities. You said you do go to seminars and you do go to conventions and you give presentations. I have a booth or I don't know what you have, but I want to hear about that side as a small business owner because you're the business guy.
Yeah, so we do conferences. We don't do a ton, but we do. Obviously, right now we're not doing any, but we do conferences to go. We go and speak. We go and present. We go network and stuff.
Right.
We have done the booth thing.
Doesn't do much.
Well,
do you go to teachers' conventions, like state?
There's a lot of conferences and stuff like that. So we'll go there. We've done the booth for a lifetime. It's like a table, you know, whatever. And we'll do that. We, you know, we give away a Kindle Fire and we throw out stress balls and
just to
and
get
stuff.
Their contact information.
And we do that. Stay we have conversations with them. And we have had we've generated business that way. It works. It's great. We have I love it. I love throwing stress balls at people. It's a blast. So we have a good time and they're fun and stuff. And we do get a lot from. When we're actually presenting at a session and training at a conference too, because then we have that actual interaction. The way we've grown it since day one and continue it is creating the content. We create content in the form of blog posts, video posts, tutorials, free online courses, downloadable material. We have a ton of downloadables from
You're talking about content marketing.
Just content marketing. We push the content marketing like crazy and then that funnels into email marketing, right?
Right.
And you have social media and from social media you go into, so we have a podcast that we do, right? So that helps us market. We make connections there. We have a Facebook group that's extremely active and we keep that 1,000% support. We don't sell anything in that book. We never even talk or in that Facebook group. We don't talk about anything. We just support. And if anyone tries to sell anything, we kick them out. Like it's really, really strict in there. Actually, we don't even usually kick them out. Like 15 members would be like, this isn't what that's groups for. Like they just know. But from
although ironically,
great.
That is selling. I mean, you're teaching people, educating, you're making them, you know, feel like you're helping them.
Yes.
It's a soft sell.
It's if you constantly help, like I said, if you're constantly helping them revive myself,
the go giver,
they'll want to come to you. It was one of my favorite things in the world. I had a new team member went down. It was when we did a booth one time and we were, there was a big one. It was a national convention for gifted educators, like educators who work with gifted students.
Gifted and talented.
We're there and we got the stress balls and pens, we got the Kindle Fire and a teacher walked up and she's like, so what do you guys do? And our new team member was like, blah, 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 blah. Said all the right things.
Vomited exactly all over her.
But she did that. I'm like, hey, don't ever do that again. She's like, well, what do you mean? I said, no, you were like saying the right things right on.
But it comes with maturity.
I said, just hold on. So the next one comes around and she's like, so what do you guys do? I'm like, oh, well, we give away Kindle Fires and stress balls. You want to win a Kindle Fire? And she's like, oh yeah, sure. She gets, you know, does her name. And she goes, yeah, but like what's the, you know, teach better? And I'm like, oh, that's just some stuff we made up so we can give away Kindle Fires at conferences. And she's like, all right.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
And I literally leaned in. I'm like, you're waiting for me to sell you something, aren't you? She goes, yeah. I'm like, I got nothing to sell you. And she's like, oh, okay. And she kind of stepped away. She goes, but really? I said, no, seriously. Like, you want a pen? You didn't grab a pen. And she's like, yeah, sure. And she walked around the corner and new team member was looking at me. And she's like, she likes us better now. Like she has our stuff and she likes us. So we're not this creep. Like everyone tried to sell her something.
Right.
Until us.
Plus she can now go to your website and learn everything you're doing anyway.
She literally comes back and goes, okay, no, seriously, tell me what you guys do. And we end up doing business with her school. She ended up being a curriculum director and it worked. Nice. I'm like, does everyone turn out that way? No, some of them take
no,
it.
Of course not.
Hear from. But the catch is that you're sold everywhere.
Right.
Like, so one of my favorite examples, in my time of starting a whole bunch of business and doing a lot of stuff, I ran restaurants, I ran Arby's restaurants. And I used to laugh, you know, you had a pre-recording that triggered when a car pulls up to the drive-thru and it's like, and most places you go, it's hi, welcome to wherever. Would you like to try our Big Mac meal?
Hello, welcome to Arby's. Can I take your message? Can I take your order?
Yeah. So the thing is like, that's not I'm not selling you anything. It's just welcome to Arby's. What can I make for you today? 9 out of 10 times, the answer was no thanks, I'm good.
At because the drive-through?
Because what they thought, what they were ready for was, would you like to try our newest combo meal? And people are so programmed because we get sold literally everywhere we go.
They say no anyway.
That their first response is no thanks, I'm good.
Right.
Because they're ready for you to sell them. It's the same thing anywhere else.
Right.
It's the same thing in a classroom. But your business is the same thing. No matter what you think your new technique or your new sales line is, they're ready to say no. The second you get on the phone, they're ready to say no. Yeah. So what you do is you never ask them for the first long while that they know you, and you continue to provide them value. So that
you build rapport, value, trust, exactly. Understanding.
So then they're not saying no anymore. They're just engaging with you. I always say, like, your email marketing, your what you're supposed to be doing, for lack of a better term, is you're training your audience. You're teaching them that when you send them something, there's value there and I'm not going to be sold. So that when you do send an ask, I'm one, more likely to open it, more likely to click it, and I like you, so I'm more likely to do it. But if you do it the right way, and it's a slow game, don't get me wrong, if you want fast stuff, you know, it's your thing.
Well, it's basically a sales funnel, and you don't the ask until they're way down the funnel.
It can be,
they understand you, they trust you, they know what you're doing. They're still in the funnel, meaning they didn't opt out because they weren't interested. So they went past all those weed checks.
They might get 100 emails from you, but if it didn't land, if it didn't come on the right day at the right time with the right message, when their bank account looked the right way, you missed. And all of those have to line up. And that might not happen for a long time, but when it does, it's a lot nicer when they call you. So
it's also a more sticky relationship. You're going to
It's a whole other game, but I'll tell you what, a phone call from a principal or a admin that says, hey, 12 of my teachers are running the grid method in a classroom and I'm seeing amazing results. Like, do you guys do this? Do you come in and can you teach the rest of my students or the rest of my teacher students? We're like, of course we can.
Yeah. We're all out this month. We can't do anymore.
But that's a lot nicer call than, hi, my name's Jeff. I'm with Teach Better Team. Can I sell you something? Right. So that's how we built everything. And that's how, you know, we actually did not hire a salesperson until January.
And right, because you didn't need
his job. His job is really just sending him a whole bunch of
like a relationship guy. He's not a
We call him an outreach coordinator.
Yeah, because it's funny. When I started in the insurance business too. My dad been in the insurance business in 1965 when it was a different kind of business. So when I came out of law school, I wanted to learn advanced tax planning and all the stuff. I do estate planning with insurance. So I went to work with these guys, and I still do a lot of sales training now at agencies and talk to people. But it's funny when you get these younger guys, and I'm sure you look at it too now. Because you can look back when you were 21, you didn't know what the hell you were doing. They, you know, you teach them all this stuff, right? So they learn about products and they learn about all this different stuff. And then they go and they get their first opportunity and they literally vomit all over the person that they're. Yeah. So hopefully it's just because they're not going to sell anything. Mm-hmm. It's totally a test meeting. I mean, they're because you've just basically tried to tell this person everything that you've crammed into your head for the last 6 months. And they don't even know what you're talking about from the first word that opened your mouth. That came out of your mouth. And, you know, it's a common problem. People talk so much. Ever go to a networking event? I go to a networking events and every once in a while I'm talking to somebody and they're like, you know, I'm getting to know people and do whatever. I'm like, I'll tell you what, let's go through this event. Try the entire night not to talk about yourself. Just ask people what they do and ask them what they are. Oh, and if they ask you, say a little bit and just push it off, like you said, you'll have a great night. And he comes out at the end of the night. He's like, oh my God, I met so many people. I have all these cards, people that want to follow me. I'm going to call them. We're going to have coffee and whatever. I go, what'd you tell them you do? He goes, I didn't tell them anything. I probably did a little bit, but for the most part, people are people want to talk about themselves. So if you elicit that from them, you know, and you're more interested in them than they're interested in what you're doing. First, they'll be obviously curious, like that lady, the story you told, right?
Yeah.
But takes a lot of the pressure off, right? Now you don't have to be such a on edge, you know, 30 second elevator pitch. I'm going to tell them everything that I do. I'm going to teach them and they're going to love me and they're going to call me and send all their business to me and I'm great. And people didn't even hear you past like, hi, I'm Mitch. That was it.
No.
You know?
And I think the biggest key to that, and if your listeners can take one really big thing away from that, is that that works the best and truly works when you actually mean it. And so one of the things,
because that people will see right through you.
People will talk to us, and I talked to a lot of other business people and stuff, and they're like, well, are you this, this, and this? And I said, yeah, but you did that and you talked about helping. But the very first thing I got from you was asking for a favor. Yeah. I said, you're not listening to me when I say this. I'm like, we operate on a help versus sell because that's how I live my life too.
Right.
And I'm like, it's not a technique. It actually ends up being a technique, but that's not why we do it.
Right.
Like, it's painful to my team sometimes because I will yell at them. I'll be like, we're sharing too much of our stuff. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, stop sharing our stuff. Share everyone else's stuff because there's a lot of value out there. It's about help. Yeah. It's not about us.
Right.
Like, what about driving the website? I'm like, they'll get to the website later. Like, right now, just make sure they like us. Yeah. Like, sell them. Look for
it's not hard to find websites
when,
these days.
When you're having a call or a meeting, network event, yeah, asking the questions is spot on. Like, you should be trying to listen.
Yeah, be a good listener. Be curious. Because
one, you're going to learn. You might learn that there's pain.
There's good stuff out there.
Yes.
Yeah, there's good things to learn from people. Yeah. You find out what their problems are.
Exactly.
You find out what these teachers struggle with. I'm sure you guys had a whole
And then you figure out what the solution is.
Yeah.
And now you're a problem solver.
Right. Like, I'm sure that's what happened with your partner. You know, he realizes that he has his problem. And then he starts learning about what other problems people have and how they deal. And that's why you guys are flexible to deal with people.
Yeah.
You know, you don't say no.
That's how we
build. Problem is, you're going to try and help them fix it.
I love that you say that you won't say no, because a school can call me about anything, be like, right. Do you guys train on this? I will say yes.
Yeah. Why do you have to say no? Because you'll get somebody to train on it.
Well,
you'll find them stuff.
They obviously can't find it because they wouldn't have called you
if they could.
Exactly. I'm very confident in our ability to create the training and work with the teachers. We'll Google how to fix that.
Right.
And then we'll put our spin on it to make it work. Or we'll go find the expert in our network.
We'll
find people, right? And we'll work with you. And that's how we built everything. That's how you should be operating all your stuff.
I rarely turn people away from a legal issue.
Yeah.
Even if I know I don't handle that. I say, listen, call me, let's talk about it. Because I'm going to figure out which family law attorney they need or which bankruptcy attorney they need or this kind of I can get it done and say, listen, you don't need to be filing for bankruptcy. We can negotiate with your creditors and we can settle things because they don't want you to go bankrupt. And we can reorganize your company and you'll live to fight another day. And, you know, and if I just said to them, oh, I'm sorry, I don't handle bankruptcy. Why don't you call this guy? They're not going to say, well, Mitch helped me. You know, you want them to think of you, right? Every single time, because it doesn't matter whether you could do it or not. You just want them to think of you first so you can have the impact.
And
obviously you've trained them to know that they should think of you first.
Yeah. And if you have the conversation and you're not the right fit, the fact that you say, hey, like I sat here, now I know all your pains. So now I know three things I can help you with, but that first thing you came with, let's get that taken care of first. I got a guy named Joe who does that and he can go take it. And then they're like, oh, great. I just learned some. We talked through some of the other problems. I'm going to get this thing taken care of. And Mitch,
and they're coming back.
You're my resource now.
Yeah.
You're now my partner because you didn't sell me when I tried to get you to sell me something.
Exactly.
And I think that's a huge piece of it, I think.
Yeah, so, but you're right. People just don't listen. They don't even hear what they're saying. It's not what they sell.
They're impatient.
Yeah.
Just wait and talk.
Yeah. But Jeff, I appreciate your time coming by today and talking about all this stuff. If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is a production of Mitchell C. Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.